Hi again, this is Bob Brundage, and today is March the 28th, 2004, and tonight we're talking with Patty Green back in New England. As a matter of fact, you know, I'm not really sure where you're living now, Patty.
We're living in Salem, New Hampshire.
Salem, New Hampshire, okay, very good. So, I'm looking forward to an interesting interview with Patty, and she's a recently recording artist and recording with Tony Oxendine's group. And so we're looking forward to hearing more about Patty's life. So tell me a little bit about, first of all, where you were born and brought up, and a little bit about life before square dancing.
Life before square dancing? Well,
Was there any?
There. Oh yes, I've had a very varied life, that's for sure. I was my parents lived in New York City, and I was born in the Long Island Jewish Hospital. My mother worked for, I believe it was Jordan Marsh, and my dad was in the Army, and he later ended up working for General Electric. I'm the oldest of five, and I was supposed to be a boy, hence my name is Patricia, because I was supposed to be Patrick. Coming from an Irish Catholic family, as my father did, you know, the firstborn is a boy. It has to have an Irish name. So we moved around quite a lot. My father ended up working for GE, and we lived in Kansas and in Pittsfield, Mass., and in the North Shore area. And we eventually landed in Melrose, Massachusetts, where I attended high school, and junior high and high school. And there's five of us, like I said, I'm the eldest, and we've always been involved in music in some way or another. Ever since I can remember, I've been singing, singing in a church choir, and singing at high school, junior high. My very first public performance, I was Brigitte in The Sound of Music.
All right.
And I was in ninth grade, and me and my best friend Jimmy Osterman got to waltz together. So I kind of got the bug way back then.
Right.
Was
yours a musical family?
Well, there was always music in the house, but it wasn't a musical family per se. We didn't sit around and sing by the piano.
Yeah.
But when I was in junior high all through high school, I ended up going to a congregational summer camp and had a major crush on a young man who played the guitar. So I picked up the guitar because I knew if I learned how to play the guitar, I could stand up and help lead singing. And that's kind of how I ended up, the musical end of it ended up happening.
I get you.
My mother sang. My father had no musical talent, but he was a great fan. You know, my sister performed in the Boston Light Opera Company and so on down the line. But so we always had music around, and music has always been my first love.
Right. Well, okay. Well, tell me, when was your first experience with square dancing?
My first experience with square dancing, my husband Steve's parents, John and Elaine Green, were very involved in square dancing in the Manchester, New Hampshire area.
I see.
And when I first started going out with Steve, they decided that they would renew their try to get Steve into square dancing. And Steve didn't want any part of it to start. And I really didn't know much about it except for, you know, an occasional Sunday night icebreaker at camp.
Right.
You know, the traditional square dance thing.
Sure.
We ended up taking lessons with the Allemandates with Ed Monty, graduated in 1991, and after the very first fun night, Steve decided he was hooked. And that was the beginning of our end.
Okay. So, Steve is your husband, I take it.
Yes.
Yes, right. Okay. Well, then how did you get into calling?
Well, our graduation, our teacher, Ed Monty, invited me to sing with him a couple of times, which was fun, but I really never really gave it a second thought until a couple that we had been dancing with, Chris Pinkham, had started calling. And he called me in the winter of 94 and told me that we were going to the New England Convention, and we weren't planning on going that year. And he told me that we were going to the New England Convention because he signed me up to call with him in the Duets Hall. So we frantically prepared and ended up singing in the Duets Hall, and I was hooked. I had finally found a way to use my music major from Plymouth State College, which was great.
Yeah.
But that was my first induction into calling.
Well.
Was singing call duets with Chris.
Okay. What was his last name?
Pinkham.
Oh, Chris Pinkham, sure.
Yes.
Okay. Well, so Chris was one of your mentors then along the way?
Yep. I've had actually quite a few mentors. We're lucky in New England to have a lot of really great callers who are always willing to share their knowledge.
Yeah.
I shadowed Norm Pasan for a season with Litchfield Swingers. I've attended school with Jim Mayo, which was very beneficial to me.
At caller school, you mean?
Yep, yep. I attended the Ritucci Page Caller Schools a couple of times. At the Jim Mayo schools, Tony Oxendine and Jerry Junk were both present, you know, and kind of very helpful. I found that people have been very helpful to me because I'm kind of a novelty because I'm a woman in New England.
Right.
And, you know, I've been very open to anybody who wanted to kind of share their knowledge with me, because I know that that's where my greatest growth comes from, in having people challenge me.
Right.
You know, and share their knowledge with me.
Right. Well, so you've been affiliated with Caller Lab and so forth, probably.
Yep, I joined Call Lab in 1996.
Okay.
We attended our first convention, the Portland Mini Lab, which I can't remember what year that was. And then attended the convention in Las Vegas 2 years ago, and this will be our third convention coming up here in Reno.
Right. What, are you a gambler or something? Or?
No, yeah, I know. Well, you know, the one blessing about calling is that it's afforded us to travel places that we probably never would have stepped out and gone to, and Vegas was one of those places I'd always wanted to go to.
There you go.
But right. I do like the slot.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Square dancing does that to people. So, what about other local associations?
I've been a member of the Tri-State Calls Association since 1996. Currently, since I joined, I've been serving as secretary. I'm still a secretary there. I've been actively involved in the New England Council of Calls Association. I was secretary for 2 years, and I'm presently vice chairman, and I will be moving up to chairman actually in June.
Oh.
That's a regional calls organization that has representatives from local calls associations throughout New England.
Right.
And through NECA, I've been involved in the Cooperation Committee, which is a group of that kind of unites dancers, cueers, and callers in the New England area.
Right, right.
So I've been pretty involved in, and then, you know, when we were dancing, we served on the board of Allemande 8. So we've been pretty involved in leadership roles ever since the day we graduated.
Well, that's great. Well, I know the NECA job is a big job.
Mm.
And, I'm sure you're looking forward to it.
It'll be interesting. Yeah. I'll be glad to not be secretary.
Well, the chairman of that is quite a prestigious job, I know. So, have you been to any local festivals? I know New England Festival you certainly go to.
Yep, been calling at the New England Festival since 94, I believe.
Yeah.
And we've gone to every single, all of them. We've attended the Canadian convention. We called up in St. John.
Oh.
We traveled to the Hawaiian convention, but didn't get a chance to officially call there. But most of it's, I called in Oklahoma City last year at the national convention.
Oh, that was my next question about nationals, yeah.
Yeah, that was our first one we had attended. It's just that the timing had never really been correct for us to attend.
Sure.
And, so it was our first year last year, and I'll be calling this year, too, in Denver.
Oh, will you? Great. Well, that's great. You better stop by Albuquerque on your way through.
You never know where we're going to end up.
True. How about Square Dance Weekends? Have you been involved in?
I had done a Square Dance Weekend in Vermont for 4 years. Mike Pettibon and Matt Auger and I did a Square Dance Weekend with a local cure, Leo Boudreau, and that's been my only weekend experience. I do have one for the Montshire Camping Squares coming up in June of this year. We've danced at a lot of them, but haven't really called at very many local weekends.
Right.
Currently, percolating on a couple of local weekends to possibly get started. So,
well, that's great. So, why don't you tell me about recording now?
Recording. Well, I love to sing, and that's my first love. It's what I went to school for. And I get the Hanhurst tape every month, and I would think to myself, I wish that I could do that. It was on my list of things to accomplish.
Uh-huh.
And a couple years ago in January, Tony called me, which was a surprise because I'm a local caller. He's a national caller, and although I know a lot of the heavy hitters, I never expected to hear Tony's voice on my answering machine, and which was good thing he wasn't here because I was doing a happy dance, and it wasn't very professional.
I see.
And he asked me if through a series of conversations, if I would like to come down and make a record for Royal Records. And I, of course, said yes, because, like I said, it was something that I've always wanted to do.
Sure.
And it meant a trip to Nashville, because they do record in the studio with live musicians, which was kind of exciting.
Yeah.
So Steve and I took our first trip down to Nashville, and I was very nervous because it was kind of the moment of truth. Vinyl either likes you or it doesn't. And I know that I had heard an awful lot of bad vinyl, and I also know that your reputation is who you associate yourself with and what people hear. So we went down, and they decided that I would do Timber. Timber, I'm Falling in Love, which I thought was a great song.
Right.
And so we got to the studio, and we were absolutely amazed at the quality of musicianship of the guys that were playing. Tony would play a song, and they would instantly be able to tell a key, and they would play it. It would sound just like the record. It was coming from my musical background. I was amazed and dumbfounded. It was very exciting to me.
Right.
So the next day they decide, it's time to lay down a vocal track. And now I've never seen anybody do this. This is as close to anything like this as I've ever been. And they decided that I would go first, which really made me very nervous because I hadn't had a chance. I'm an observer. I hadn't had a chance to observe somebody else doing it, to know what you could do and couldn't do and, what was kind of the standard.
Right.
So they stuck me in the room all by myself, and Tony put the headphones on my head, and he put the headphone, because you got one headphone over your ear, and I have it on my bad ear, you know, the one that you don't hold up to the phone that you don't hear so well. And I was so nervous, I didn't think that I could swap it to the ear that I heard could hear better. And they started playing the music, and I had to sing along to the music all by myself in this room. And Tony said I was so nervous that he's never seen anybody more nervous, because I really wanted to succeed. You know, it was something that I really wanted to do well.
Sure.
I know that they took a big risk putting me on the label, and I wanted to kind of, you know, rise to the occasion. Plus, like I said, you know, you're a product of the things that come out of you.
Right.
So I did it in one take, which they were amazed at, because that's what I thought you were supposed to do. I mean, you know, I hadn't seen anybody else do it. And I get all done, and I'm beet red, and I'm flushed, and I'm just about ready to faint, and I needed to go do something, and they asked me if I wanted to listen to it, which of course I didn't, because it took me 3 years to listen to my senior recital tape. I don't really want to listen to myself at this point. So they had all been in the control room and smiling and, you know, being very supportive and all this stuff. So I sat down in the control room, and this was the Wednesday before the New England Convention.
Oh, yes.
We were flying back right to the New England Convention.
Right.
It was an April session. So I sat down, and I put my head in my hands, and they started playing back what I had recorded. And I was screech your fingernails on a chalkboard flat, which really was kind of funny. And I'm thinking to myself, boy, I am horrible. There's no way. I can't believe this. I can't believe my husband's been telling me that I can sing. So I was laughing, and I heard screech my fingernails on the chalkboard, and I'm going, Steve, does that really sound like me? And he said, yeah, it sounds like you to me. I said, oh, man. And in 2 seconds in my head, I was trying to figure out how I could gracefully get out of calling at the New England Convention and sell my equipment, because I was never going to call again, ever. And Tony and Larry Letson were there, and Steve was there, and all of a sudden, I picked up my head, and I said, I stink. I'm not going to call ever again. And they started laughing and decided that they would let me hear the real thing. They had warped my voice down. So it was kind of funny, because, you know, I didn't expect that. And they were dying of laughter. So that was my introduction into the recording world.
Right.
I was ready to quit calling, and I was never going to call again.
Well, I know that was the message that I got. I was at the New England Convention that year, and it was all the story at the at the after parties afterward. I was with Jim Mayo and my brother Al and a few other people that told me that story, and I was happy that you brought it out, because it's a winner.
It was, you know, I'm a perfectionist, and I, you know, my music is a gift that I was given, and I really enjoy sharing that gift. And I was, you know, hoping that it wouldn't be as bad as I thought it was going to be. And then when they ever played it, I was convinced that everybody's just been being nice to me. You know, it was a nice run. Oh well, and it ended up being a good selling record. I've since done two more for Tony and Jerry, and, you know, I really have been grateful for the opportunity, because it's been a fun ride. You know, it's taken me places that I never, ever would have expected.
Right.
And it's, you know, if somebody's going to give me an opportunity in the calling field, then I'm going to take it, because I know that's how you get, you know, you push yourself and you get better.
Right, right.
But that's my big recording story that I'll tell my grandchildren when I'm 90 years old.
Right. Well, what were the other two records that you've made since then?
I've done The Last Farewell, Roger Whittaker's song. And I last October, I recorded Holly Jolly Christmas, which has not been released yet. That one will be released hopefully this holiday season.
Yeah, sure. Well, that's great. So, well, yeah, and I've heard you call at the convention, and I go along with everybody else. I think you do it just great. So.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Yeah. I do appreciate that.
Yeah, well, let's get away from recording a little bit. Do you ever cue round dances?
I do not cue round dances.
Okay.
We're now taking round dance lessons, but I don't cue.
Uh-huh. Okay. How about, do you do contra dancing?
Not really. The only contra I do is at a fun night, you know,
yeah.
The Virginia No Reel. But I'm not really a contra prompter at all.
Right. Okay. Well, that was a following question. What about one-night stands? You do several of those?
I do a lot of one-night stands.
Yeah.
They're my favorite thing to do because it's fun to see people who have never square danced before light up and just walk away with a bounce in their step.
Yes.
And, you know, I care very much about new dancers and new, you know, people being exposed.
Right.
And I do fun nights for, you know, everywhere from little kids up to adults to high school. I've been in a local high school 3 years in a row, and they have a waiting list of kids that want to come square dance, which I just think is hysterical.
Yes, that's great.
So I do a lot of fun nights.
That's great. Well, I know fun nights are great in the fact that very often you get repeat business year after year, you know.
Right, exactly.
And, yeah. So I know when I moved to Albuquerque, I was still calling at the time, and I suddenly realized, hey, I lost all my one-night stand contacts. But I wanted to ask you one kind of serious question.
Okay.
What do you think is the appeal to calling square dances? What do you get a charge out of?
Well, I really enjoy watching people from all different walks of life come together at an activity where they can laugh and kind of forget about whatever their problems are or whatever life is, and really, you know, enjoy company and the fellowship and the socialization and the exercise. And I love to sing, and it's an outlet for me to share that gift. But
right.
I just, the best thing is to just see people laughing and walking away singing, for
right.
me.
Well, that's great. That's great. Well, with your vast experience in our field, do you have any regrets, anything you wish you'd done differently?
I wish that when I first started calling, I had somebody tell me, this is going to sound very strange, but I wish that I had somebody tell me that the chicken plucker was a great choreographic tool and that I should use it. And I also wish, the first year of calling, I very much was concerned about choreography and, you know, being perfect.
Yeah.
And I almost quit calling. And the second caller school we went to, Johnny Preston was there. And he had a different tact. He wasn't he didn't kind of stress technical for new callers. He stressed more, use whatever tools you have in your box to give the dancers a good time, entertain the dancers.
Right.
And I think that those are the two things that I wish I had done different. I wish somebody had told me that the chicken plucker wasn't an apologetic choreography management tool to use until you get good, because it's not. You know, I see that now.
Yes.
And now I'm trying to backtrack and, you know, break some bad habits and relearn how to call. And I wish that somebody had up front told me not to so much worry that the technical would come, but instead do your best to give people a good time and don't apologize for it.
Right, right. Well, you consider yourself a site caller?
I would say that I'm starting to get comfortable with site calling.
Uh-huh, okay.
The first part of my career, and actually I still do sometimes, I am a speed reader, and I have had a lot of sequences written down on index cards that I would use. And I'll admit it, that I still do that, because I would rather give somebody a good dance than call, you know, dive through, bend the line, wheel and deal, pass through, searching
right.
for somebody.
Right.
And I'm just now starting to get comfortable with kind of flying solo.
Yeah, or flying blind, as they say.
Right, flying blind.
Right.
But I try and use a bunch of different tools. I'm not real good at memorization, so it's hard for me to be a module caller.
Uh-huh.
Although there's some of them are starting to come to me now just because of, you know, the repetition.
Yeah.
So I would say I'm probably 50-50 now.
Well, good. So, but you consider yourself just a part-time caller at the moment, though?
At the moment, part-time, yep. I teach two classes. You know, I call throughout the year. It's my kind of my second career, as it were.
Right.
And if it's in the cards for me to be full-time, great, you know, but that comes with time.
Sure.
And, you know, I'm lucky enough that I work at home, so that affords me the ability to take time off.
Yeah.
You know, to do things that come along my way.
Right. Do you have any other hobbies, or don't have time for them?
Any other hobbies? Well, let's see. We have two grandchildren.
Yeah, that's a hobby.
And a four-year-old nephew, so the three of them are just my delight.
Yeah.
I do a lot of crafts. I play the guitar. We like to travel. I love to read.
Yeah.
You know, just the kind of the general, I don't really have enough time for to take up golf or things like that.
Yeah,
although I do own a set of clubs.
There you go.
So I pretty much have a lot of things up my sleeve that keep me occupied.
Yes, right. Okay, one more serious question.
Okay.
Now, we all know that square dancing is suffering a little bit attendance-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think square dancing is going in the future? And I'm talking now in general.
I think that probably there's going to be kind of two camps of square dancing. Right now we've bred a bunch of dancers who need to be challenged, and I think that they have, quite a few of them have forgotten about the socialization aspect of square dancing, kind of a fellowship and, you know, just have a good time. I think that a workshop is a place where I can stretch my dancers, and a dance is a place where they just want to come and be entertained.
Right.
And I think that going forward, clubs who understand the social fellowship aspect of the activity and don't make demands and require people to take office, or, you know, our allowance of people to have a life, those clubs are probably going to survive.
Right.
And I've noticed in the past few months with the people who have been to fun nights, people are really interested in dancing, but they don't want to make the commitment of a whole year's worth before they can dance.
True, right.
And, you know, I think that there's probably going to be two... I really think if we don't stop being so technical and demanding of our dancers, that, you know, they're going to eventually go to where they can just go and have fun.
Right.
You know, and that's not a very popular opinion, because a lot of my peers think technical.
Right.
You know, and I would rather sing them songs all night, have them have a good time, and go away and feel good about themselves.
Right. Well, I happen to agree with you 100%.
You know, so there's two areas. It's just that the two areas have to be respectful of each other.
Right.
And understand that, in the words of a famous gospel song, all God's chillin' got a place in the choir.
Yeah, okay. Well, so I think just about exhausted everything I had in mind. Unless you think of something else, I see we're getting down near the end of one side of this tape. Do you have anything else you want to tell me about?
No, I think that we really enjoyed this square dance adventure. I know that I very much enjoy calling. I love teaching. I love new dancers. I enjoy the entertainment factor. And I will be open to, I don't know what the future is going to hold.
Sure.
You know, I've been fortunate enough to do two special dances at the two Call Lab conventions I'm at. You know, and call with the Ghost Riders Band at Nationals last year, you know, my first Nationals, which was absolutely amazing.
Right.
And I think that for me, you know, I just hope that I can keep my attitude in a good spot and keep taking the opportunities that come up and, you know, rise to the level of competency that some of my peers are expecting me to go to.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of people that think very highly of me, and, if, you know, you think, oh, if they only knew the real side. But, you know, but they stretch me to be better.
Yes.
And I think that that's the most important thing. You know, I have to remember that all these dancers are people.
Right.
And if you can make that personal connection with somebody, I think it's more important than impressing them with your choreography.
Right.
You know, because they will remember that you treated them as a person and not as just a $5 entrance fee.
Right.
So that's kind of my goal, to kind of keep that, you know, level-headed opinion of myself.
Right. Yes.
No, which my husband, Steve, helps me.
Good, good. Well, then from what I'm hearing, I guess what you're saying is you're going to keep on doing what you're doing.
Yeah, I guess I'll keep on doing what I'm doing. I have to keep on doing what I'm doing for a couple more years because I'm now on the Board of Governors. So, you know, until I get kicked off of the Board of Governors, I guess I'll keep on doing what I'm doing.
All right. Well, I'm sure you'll make a great contribution to the board.
Well, thank you very much.
And I think you have a great attitude.
Thank you.
And so I think, well, we're just about down to the end of the tape.
Okay.
And I wish you'd just hang on a second. I'll turn the tape off, and I'd like to chat with you a couple minutes before we go.
Sure.
Hang on.